Well, this is the last in our series looking at the heroes of the faith, the women and men of the Bible that had a character trait or made decisions that are worth copying today. And next week, we will start with our Prodigal God series, looking in a different way at the parable of the prodigal son. And last week, Pastor Carol showed how Mary Magdalene was undeterred in her devotion to Jesus. Our last hero is Rahab. For context, this story takes place as the Israelites are starting to invade the promised land after wandering in the desert for 40 years. Moses has passed away by this point, leaving Joshua in charge. If you remember, several weeks ago, we saw Caleb, one of the spies that Moses sent into the land the first time. And Caleb and Joshua were faithful and trusted God, but the other 10 spies were afraid. And if you remember, there were two things they were afraid of. One was true, and one they had made up. The one that was true was that the cities were well fortified. The thing that they made up was that the people were giants. So this is the second attempt at coming into the promised land, hopefully with a more faithful generation. They didn't find any giants, but they did find plenty of well-fortified cities with very thick walls, Jericho foremost among them. Jericho is located in the desert, a few miles away from the Jordan River, which may not seem like the most obvious place to put a city, but I traveled there several years ago, and I still vividly remember the fabulous local fruit that we had from there. Yes, fruit in the middle of the desert. That's because the area has a natural spring, so it is a very fertile oasis in an otherwise barren desert. And that's what made Jericho loom so large in the minds of Joshua and the other Israelites. We've talked before, the main way that armies could overcome a well-defended walled city was through a siege and basically starve them out. But how do you starve out a city that has large, thick, double walls and has a natural spring so they have all the water they need and they already have an agricultural base set up next to the spring? The answer is there's no easy way to do it. And that is why in our text today, Joshua sends the two spies and he tells them to give special attention to Jericho. Joshua is looking for a creative solution because the normal ways of war will not work against Jericho. Now, you probably know, as we heard in our first text earlier, that God makes the walls fall down. That's a very creative solution, is get your deity to knock the walls down. But before they received their divine intervention, the Israelites first needed to catch a break. They needed a window of opportunity. So listen to how Rahab provides that opportunity and also her reasons for doing it. Joshua chapter 2. Then Joshua, son of Nun, sent two men secretly from Shittim as spies, saying, "Go view the land, especially Jericho." So they went and entered the house of a prostitute whose name was Rahab and spent the night there. The king of Jericho was told, "Some Israelites have come here tonight to search out the land." Then the king of Jericho sent orders to Rahab, "Bring out the men who have come to you, who entered your house, for they have come only to search out the whole land." But the woman took the two men and hid them. Then she said, "True, the men came to me, but I did not know where they came from." And when it was time to close the gate at dark, the men went out. Where the men went, I do not know. Pursue them quickly, for you can overtake them. She had, however, brought them up to the roof and hidden them with the stalks of flax that she had laid out on the roof. Kind of picture an irrigation ditch, unpleasant but effective. So the men pursued them on the way to the Jordan as far as the fords. As soon as the pursuers had gone out, the gate was shut. Before they went to sleep, she came up to them on the roof and said to the men, "I know that the Lord has given you the land, and that dread of you has fallen on us, and that all the inhabitants of the land melt in fear before you. For we have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea before you when you came out of Egypt, and what you did to the two kings of the Amorites that were beyond the Jordan, to Sihon and Og, whom you utterly destroyed. As soon as we heard it, our hearts melted. There was no courage left in any of us because of you. The Lord your God is indeed God in heaven above and on earth below. Now then, since I have dealt kindly with you, swear to me by the Lord that you in turn will deal kindly with my family. Give me a sign of good faith that you will spare my father and mother, my brothers and sisters, all who belong to them, and deliver our lives from death." The two spies said to her, "Our life for yours. If you do not tell this business of ours, then we will deal kindly and faithfully with you when the Lord gives us the land." Then she let them down by a rope through the window, for her house was on the outer side of the city wall, and she resided within the wall itself. She said to them, "Go toward the hill country, so that the pursuers may not come upon you. Hide yourselves there for 3 days until the pursuers have returned, and then afterward you may go your way." This is the word of the Lord, so thanks be to God. Well, rewind with me if you can in your imagination to the days of the Wild West. Imagine that you're strolling into a dusty town, and you don't have enough funds to have a horse, by the way, so you are on foot. You're hungry. You're thirsty. So what's your first stop along the way? The saloon, right? You've got two choices in this particular town. One is a respectable saloon, where guns, gambling, and saloon girls are prohibited. It's a fancy establishment with music and billiards. It's also expensive. Your second choice is a little rundown. It's a little dusty, a little rowdy, but a whole lot cheaper. And as you walk up to this more affordable choice, a man is chased out of the building by the female saloon owner with her double-barrel shotgun. She's screaming something about a bar tab. Inside, the air is musty. There's only just enough light for the people at the gambling tables to see their cards. There are saloon girls all around, and it's anyone's guess who's open to more than just flirting for the right price. No one spends too much time staring at anyone else, because this is not the place for the curious. If you can smell that tobacco-filled air, if you can maybe hear that ragtime piano in the corner, if you can picture the shady characters at the gambling table, if you can imagine the brash and the iron-willed female owner of the saloon, then you are pretty close to Rahab's establishment in Jericho. We know from other sources that Rahab ran a somewhat seedy inn that was situated between the two layers of the wall in Jericho. This was where the less reputable businesses and homes were situated. They were there. They were encouraged to build there because the walls of those structures would actually reinforce the city walls, but that also meant they were vulnerable to attack. So the more wealthy people preferred spaces a little further in from the wall. It is not 100% clear whether Rahab herself was a prostitute or if she was just running a brothel. Either way, I think it is pretty safe to say that she was not the most morally upstanding citizen of Jericho. I think we can say that. So Rahab has a well-deserved bad reputation. She has a rundown saloon in the bad part of town. She does seem to be a pretty good fast talker, convincing the soldiers the way she does. So she's quick on her feet mentally. She has commitment when she decides to do something. She was pretty committed to these spies. Oh, and she has that pile of flax sitting on her roof in stinky water. Not ready yet, but it can be sold later. So do a little, line-by-line comparison. If you were, had an accounting spreadsheet of your resources relative to Rahab, how do you compare? How's your reputation, whether it's deserved or not? Do you have a lot of financial resources or are very meager financial resources or somewhere in between? Do you have a feisty personality, or are you more even-keeled? Are you a planner or an improviser? Are you committed and reliable, or maybe not so much? Do you have some ideas for the future that aren't ready yet? A few weeks ago, we were having a discussion in the church office about what we would do if we personally won the lottery. And since there is no video evidence of this conversation, I assure you, it was full of very deep theology and selfless compassion throughout all of it. You believe me, right? Yeah. So I said at this conversation that my main problem thinking about what I would do if I won the lottery is that many of my ideas require more money than that. My biggest ideas would require billions, not merely millions. In other words, you could give me $1 million and I've got ideas for how to use it, but I also have ideas for 10 million, for 100 million, for a billion, maybe even tens of billions, hundreds of billions, that might be where I'm tapped out. But if you've got the hookup on hundreds of billions of dollars, I'd be glad to give it a shot. So what's the number for you though? How big can you dream? Or how many resources would you need before you could achieve your biggest, hairiest, most audacious dreams? Or maybe have you ever thought, if I only had much more money, then I could really be useful to God or society? Or maybe if I only had a different family situation, or if I didn't have to be a caregiver all the time, then I could matter. Or maybe if I'd only made better decisions in my past, then I would have more opportunities now. Here's the main question. Do you think you need to have more than you have right now to be useful to God? Do you think that you need to have a different situation than you have right now to be useful to God? Rahab might have thought that too. But she's a hero of the faith in my eyes, because when the opportunity came to her, she used everything she had. Every resource, every ability, every talent. She used everything she had for God's purposes. I mean, hey, if the location of my brothel isn't the most unlikely thing God has ever used, I don't know what is. Now, maybe you might quibble with me. Maybe you might be willing to admit that you probably have better moral character than Rahab did. Maybe you're willing to admit that you've got some resources, maybe even more than Rahab. But maybe you want to tell me, hey, you know, she gets mentioned in the Hall of Fame of Faith in Hebrews. Clearly she had more faith than I do. Maybe she did later. Later on, if you continue to trace her story, she seems to have truly converted to the Jewish faith. But right here at this moment, her statement of faith to the spies, in short, is, "Your God is powerful. I'm afraid to stand in your God's way." Nowhere does she say, "Oh, I'm renouncing my Jericho tribal gods." She doesn't proclaim a monotheistic devotion to Yahweh. All she does is recognize power when she sees it. It's one of the weakest statements of faith in the whole Bible. You probably have more faith than Rahab did at this particular moment in time. But what she had was enough. What she had was enough. Think about that. What she had was enough. And what you have is enough too. You don't need more to be useful to God. You don't need a different situation to be able to show the love of Christ to the people in your lives. You don't need to be a different person to let God use you in some small way. What you have is enough. You are enough right now. One of our church members has been integral in helping me with the robot computer programming camps that I've offered the last 2 years, despite the fact that she says, and I quote, "I know nothing about computers." Here she is, helping kids learn how to program robots. And no, she's not teaching them how to program. No, she's not troubleshooting the internet and Bluetooth connection issues that we had. No, she's not telling them the proper way to use multiple conditionals in their control loops. We have other people to do that. But she was able to organize the snacks every day. Some of the best pictures from the whole camp are the kids showing off their snack creations for the day. We told them, you get to play with your food just this once. And make a robot with your snack food, or make a maze, or make a self-driving car with the components of your food. And she made that happen. We had the kids build cardboard mazes for their robots, and then they tried to program their robots to get through the maze. And whenever you have to multiply something by 19 kids, it starts to get pretty significant. And so we needed 400 strips of cardboard cut. And I was going to organize like a volunteer to do it on Sunday. I didn't need to. She did it all. and even rubber banded them in tiny little stacks of 10. More than half of the kids who came were invited by this church member. 11 of the 19 kids learned to program this summer because someone who doesn't know anything about computers invited them and pitched in wherever she could. I think that's pretty amazing. But what if she said, well, I don't know anything about computers, so I can't help with a robot camp? Well, then 11 kids wouldn't know how to program. 11 kids wouldn't have their own robots at home this whole year. That's the difference between saying, I can't do these things, and saying, yeah, but I can do these other things. You may know of 1,000 ways that God cannot use you. You may know of 1,000 ways that you do not measure up. You may know of 1,000 ways someone else could do it better, and you might even be right. But what about the things you can do? I've heard one of the former Broncos players say on the radio that sometimes the best ability is availability. If you're available, God can use you to make a difference in someone's life, and you don't need more to do that. Sisters and brothers, Rahab is one of the most unlikely people to play a major role in Jewish history, but she was willing to use her meager resources at just the right moment. Unlike many of the heroes of the faith that we have seen, she wasn't particularly moral. She wasn't particularly faithful at this moment. She wasn't particularly notable. But she was available. And she was committed once she decided to help. That is pretty heroic. And so you don't need to win the lottery to be available to God. You don't need a different family situation to be available to God. You don't need to have better health to be available to God. You don't need to know more about the Bible to be available to God. You can be available right now. Will you be available when the moment comes?